La 7137e séance du Conseil de sécurité est ouverte. L'ordre du jour provisoire de la présente séance est la situation concernant la République démocratique du Congo. L'ordre du jour est adopté. Conformément à l'article 37 du règlement intérieur provisoire du Conseil, j'invite le représentant de la République démocratique du Congo à participer à la présente séance. Il en est ainsi décidé. Conformément à l'article 39 du règlement intérieur provisoire du Conseil, j'invite M. Martin Kubler, représentant spécial du secrétaire général et chef de la mission de l'Organisation des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation en République démocratique du Congo, à participer à la présente séance. Il en est ainsi décidé. Conformément à l'article 39 du règlement intérieur provisoire du Conseil, j'invite Mme Mary Robinson, envoyée spéciale du secrétaire général pour la région des Grands Lacs, à participer à la présente séance. Il en est ainsi décidé. Au nom du Conseil, je souhaite la bienvenue à Mme Robinson qui participe à la séance d'aujourd'hui par visioconférence depuis Londres. Le Conseil de sécurité va maintenant aborder l'examen du point 2 de l'ordre du jour. J'appelle l'attention des membres du Conseil sur le rapport du secrétaire général sur la mise en œuvre de l'accord cadre pour la paix, la sécurité et la coopération en République démocratique du Congo et dans la région, publié sous la cote S/2014/153. J'appelle également l'attention des membres du Conseil sur le rapport du secrétaire général sur la mission de l'Organisation des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation en République démocratique du Congo, publié sous la cote S/2014/157. Je donne maintenant la parole à M. Martin Kubler.
Merci bien, Madame la Présidente, distingués membres du Conseil de sécurité. Je voudrais présenter tout d'abord mes félicitations au Luxembourg qui préside le Conseil durant ce mois de mars. Il y a deux mois que je vous exposais comment les espoirs suscités en 2013 commençaient à se matérialiser au profit du peuple congolais. Aujourd'hui, je suis ici à la recherche de votre soutien. Votre soutien au renouvellement de notre mandat afin de mener cette mission à bout. Voici une excellente opportunité de vérifier l'efficacité de la MONUSCO et en particulier de la composante militaire. Depuis 2013, nous avons accompli beaucoup. La défaite militaire du M23, les opérations conjointes contre les Forces démocratiques de libération du Rwanda, les FDLR, et les Forces démocratiques alliées, les ADF, et la sécurisation des territoires libérés contribuent tous à l'émergence d'îlots de stabilité afin de graduellement rétablir l'autorité de l'État à l'est du pays. À présent, nous devons consolider les gains acquis tout en continuant à sécuriser les zones où les groupes armés sont encore actifs. Il s'agit d'empêcher tout retour en arrière en dressant des garde-fous. C'est maintenant à nous de gagner la paix avec énergie, conviction et persistance. Madam President, distinguished members of the Security Council, there is a new momentum and we have to build on it. Our robust protection stance and the hard-won stability are the foundation upon which peace can be built. Let me, at the outset, describe two events which symbolize where we stand. The first is a good barometer of the progress made, and the second illustrates that much remains to be done to bring peace and security to conflict-affected areas. Let me describe these events. Initially scheduled for September 2013, the Amani Music and Dance Festival for Peace eventually took place in February 2014, thanks to the return of peace to Goma. This festival was a perfect illustration of how culture is capable of bringing people together in peace. Over 11,000 Congolese and Rwandans sang and danced together. After the festival, I visited the so-called Triangle of Death in Katanga, I saw some of the 80 burnt and deserted villages. Maimai Bakata Katanga groups have been systematically burning down villages and terrorizing the population. Over 400,000 people have been displaced so far. I saw children just separated from these armed groups, their eyes glazed and empty, their parents killed. They had no home to return to. I decided to reinforce our presence in Katanga. Still, Katanga, just as the DRC, is a real paradox, very rich, but also troubled by extreme poverty. These two events illustrate the hope and the desperation, the chances and the challenges, the past and the future of the people of Congo. Madam President, on the eve of the adoption of a new mandate, MONUSCO's overriding priorities remain the same. Security and protection will be our first priority, followed by the stabilization of conflict-affected areas, and third, supporting reform processes and the implementation of the peace, security, and cooperation framework. MONUSCO cannot stay forever in the Congo. With your help, we have to speedily and consistently work together with our Congolese partners to bring about sustainable peace and start planning phasing out the mission. The move of much of our civilian personnel to the east is a first step. Thanks to intelligence fused from different sources, including unarmed unmanned aviation system, the so-called UAVs, ongoing sweeping operations have become better targeted against the FDLR. We have been very clear to them, surrender now or you will face full force. The government, too, has stepped up his efforts to put an end to the threat the FDLR poses to the population, and I am confident it will not stop until they lay down their weapons. Together, we have continued our military operations against the FDLR. After the ADF attacks in December, during which 21 civilians were killed, including 11 babies and young children, the Congolese army launched large-scale operations against ADF positions. With the support of the force, the FARDC destroyed the main ADF headquarters, cleared the main axes and routes, and are now undertaking operations to flush out remaining pockets of ADF resistance. Madam President, to bring our mission to a good end, the force, however, has to modernize. 14 years of static approach to the protection of civilians has proven insufficient. The force needs to be robust, flexible, versatile, highly mobile, and well-trained, and fully able to deploy across the whole of Eastern DRC, holding key areas and operating deep into the most inaccessible areas. We need a more active presence in Ituri, South Kivu, and Katanga. If we are to enhance our ability to effectively deal with armed groups, the force as a whole has to tirelessly pursue them. To that end, the force is reducing part of its long-term static site and operating bases and is focusing on the use of mobile forces. The recent redeployment of Egyptian special forces to Katanga and the Uruguayan reaction to the attack of Cheka and Pinga in January demonstrated how a proactive approach can deter attacks on civilians and how all force components and units can work together in a combined approach. Our motto says it all: one mandate, one mission, one force. Madam President, nonetheless, the use of force is not a means in itself. It is guided by one important principle: politics first. We always strive for a peaceful and voluntary solution. The use of force alone will not achieve sustainable results if not embedded in a political framework. The military success over the M23 will not be durable if the Nairobi declarations are not implemented and the ex-combatants now in Uganda and Rwanda are not speedily integrated into society. I welcome the recently adopted amnesty law, which rightly precludes perpetrators of gross human rights violations. The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo, however, needs to take rapidly concrete steps to ensure implementation of the National Program for Disarmament, Demobilization and Reintegration, DDR. I urge both the international community and the government to find solutions as to the structure and financing of the DDR process. I cannot but overestimate the importance of adequate civilian follow-up actions. Without those, the military gains will prove to be ephemeral. Given that we cannot tolerate any rollback or any undermining of what has been achieved so far, failure to rapidly implement the DDR plan would be a serious setback. We cannot allow this to happen. Since my last briefing to the Security Council, sexual violence against young girls and women has continued to be a problem. The mission maintains zero tolerance for sexual terrorism, and MONUSCO, together with the Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights, will publish a thematic report on the fight against impunity for sexual violence in the coming days. We remain engaged in fighting against impunity. The trial of those suspected of involvement in the Minova case resumed after interruption. The military court has so far heard 60 testimonies from victims of rape and other human rights violations. In support of Congolese military justice, MONUSCO continued to provide technical and logistic support. There is also zero tolerance for recruiting child soldiers. Since mid-December, 268 children were removed from the ranks of armed groups that surrendered to the Congolese army. The youngest was a 10-year-old boy. Madam President, our second priority, the stabilization of freed areas, should lead to the restoration of state authority. The concept of islands of stability was a direct answer to quickly embed state authority in post-conflict territories. In my last briefing, I could not report that children were going to school or that administration was functioning in areas liberated from M23. Now, I can. I'm pleased to report that in Kivancha Rujuru, the advances have been quite impressive. Police units have been deployed, supported by UNPOL, with tents, rations, fuel. The territorial administrator, civil servants have returned, and MONUSCO and the country team are developing projects to rehabilitate police, justice, and administrative buildings. The prison of Rutshuru has reopened and its personnel was trained by MONUSCO. Ownership is crucial, and that's why I am glad that the North Kivu authorities identified 7 additional pilot projects to turn into islands of stability. But despite this progress, daunting difficulties remain before we can speak of delivery of full basic public services to people in the region. Though hampered by poor logistics and irregular salary payment to civil servants, the local government needs to be practical and focus on what can make a difference to the people. To better support the government where it is most needed, the mission is undergoing its transformation into a field mission. We move to the east. 2/3 of all substantive staff in Kinshasa are being deployed to reinforce existing field offices in support of our operations in the east. We have established a permanent civilian presence in Kivanja and this will be replicated in other areas. MONUSCO moves nearer to the very people it means to assist. The reconfiguration is not meant to prolong MONUSCO's stay in the DRC. On the contrary, it is a first step to an inevitable exit. Our third priority is encouraging the implementation of key reforms in the context of the peace, security, and cooperation framework. Continued robust military operations by the FARDC and MONUSCO, followed by stabilization efforts, need to be accompanied by consistent efforts to reform on the part of the government. In support of this government's reform plans, I have set up a coordination group at ambassadorial level in Kinshasa, aimed at harmonizing the positions of the donor community. This coordination group looks at 4 areas of overarching concern for the United Nations and international partners in the Democratic Republic of Congo: DDR, elections, security sector reform, and stabilization. Our messages are clear. DDR of former fighters has to happen now. Preparation for the elections have to start now. Concrete projects on progress on SSR has to be delivered now. I strongly encourage the government to accelerate implementation of key reforms and urge the donors to assist in financing these reforms. I'm particularly concerned by the slow pace of security sector reform, despite President Kabila's emphasis in his address to the nation of 23rd of October that it was the priority of priorities. We need the Congolese army's rapid reaction force to ultimately take over from the Force Intervention Brigade. Early advances on police reform and justice reform have also suffered a setback because insufficient budgetary provisions, which in the long term prevents us to address impunity and poor governance. On the electoral front, the Independent National Electoral Commission presented the National Assembly with a draft roadmap calling for local, urban, and municipal elections in early 2015. It is important that its adoption be conducted in a transparent and inclusive manner. Through our good offices, we will continue to promote an inclusive dialogue with a view to creating an environment conducive to the holding of credible elections, respecting the constitutional provisions regarding the elections, both in terms of procedure and calendar, must be upheld. I appeal to the international community to support the Congo on its path to democratic rule. Your support is crucial to safeguard proper democratic principles. Your support is crucial to guarantee a vote for every Congolese. Your support is crucial to avoid the errors of the past. I also call upon the opposition to participate in a constructive way and urge all political parties to sign the Code of Conduct. I remain concerned, however, by recent political developments preventing all political forces to freely move and campaign. I therefore urge the government to respect fundamental rights, such as freedom of speech, expression, and assembly to all political forces, protected by the Congolese constitution. I have instituted an electoral incidents task force to closely monitor the situation and will report regularly. Madam President, on 24th of February, we celebrated the first anniversary of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework. The Special Envoy of the Secretary General, Mary Robinson, with whom I continue to enjoy an excellent relationship, will go further into detail here on the implementation also of the national commitments. Madam President, after decades of conflict between neighboring countries, contacts at all levels of the region's governments indicate a new dynamic in the region. Mutual trust is fragile. Confidence building takes time. Still, investment in cross-border transport infrastructure and economic cooperation will pave the way to regional prosperity. First, I wish to thank the donor community for their financial contribution in helping us upgrading the Goma Airport. Turning Goma into an economic hub will boost economic development and foster regional cooperation. I leave it to Special Envoy Mary Robinson to elaborate on the current initiative to promote private entrepreneurship. Second, the natural resources of the Congo should be a source of prosperity, not poverty. I welcome the government's intent to increase public revenues from natural resources, legalizing and regulating the exportation, exploitation of minerals is addressing the root causes of the conflict. Madam President, distinguished members of the Council, despite many difficulties, I sense a spirit of dynamism and hope. This is certainly not a guarantee for success. This spirit, however, is an obligation for all of us in MONUSCO and in the country team to grasp the opportunity, maybe for the first time in many years, the opportunity to reach a durable solution. However, peace has a price tag. MONUSCO will reduce its budget. Over 300 posts will be cut. I am the first to criticize inefficiencies, reduce duplication, fine-tune management structures. Solid work, however, needs solid resources. Madame la Présidente, à la veille du renouvellement du mandat de la MONUSCO, nous voyons le futur avec espoir, mais réalité. Je suis confiant que lorsque les chants de la jeunesse congolaise auront remplacé celui de Bâle, des Bâles, la prospérité sera au rendez-vous. Je tiens à remercier l'ensemble du personnel des Nations Unies pour leur engagement quotidien, de plus en plus dans des circonstances difficiles, à œuvrer pour une paix durable en RDC. plus particulièrement à l'occasion du 12e anniversaire de Radio Capi, permettez-moi d'exprimer mon immense reconnaissance pour le travail et l'engagement de tout son personnel. Radio Capi, ce n'est pas une radio comme les autres. Elle est rentrée dans le quotidien des Congolais, parfois en étant leur seule source d'information. Par la voix des ondes, elle contribue à unifier la société congolaise. Madame la Présidente et distingués membres du Conseil de sécurité, je vous remercie encore une fois pour votre soutien.
Je remercie M. Kubla pour son exposé et je donne maintenant la parole à Mme Mary Robinson.
Thank you, Madam President, distinguished members of the Council. Thank you for this opportunity to brief you today from London and for the strong support given by the Security Council to efforts to bring durable peace and stability to the Democratic Republic of Congo and the region. Just 1 year after the signing of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework for the DRC and the region, I remain convinced that it offers the best prospects and hope for security and for the improvement of the living conditions of the people in the region who continue to bear the brunt of armed violence and aggression. Indeed, in the last year, hope has risen with the defeat of the M23 rebel movement, followed by the conclusion of the Kampala dialogue declarations between the parties. The FARDC, supported by MONUSCO and its Force Intervention Brigade, is pursuing its efforts to rid the east of the country of the armed groups. Furthermore, despite numerous challenges, hope for dialogue, trust and regional cooperation, the basis for peace and security, have appeared stronger in the last year. By collaborating on the regional benchmarks and building consensus on the plan of action for the implementation of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework, countries of the Great Lakes region have been able to show the possibilities of the framework of hope, and that durable peace and security for the region can be within grasp if the current momentum is sustained. I should, however, stress that the situation in eastern DRC and the region remains quite precarious and would require actions at several levels to sustain the current momentum and to achieve meaningful results. Madam President, distinguished members of the Council, a good way to sustain the current momentum and to ensure that the Framework of Hope delivers on its promises is to align international actions with emerging positive regional dynamics, which reinforce the objectives of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework. Angola's current chairmanship of the International Conference on the Great Lakes region offers a good opportunity and holds significant prospects for advancing the cause of peace and stability in the region. At the last ICGLR summit in Luanda in January, President Dos Santos shared a vision for his tenure which complements the objectives of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework. In this regard, the President initiated a political dialogue with Presidents Kagame, Kabila, Museveni and Zuma on illegal armed groups such as the FDLR and ADF, during which they agreed on a plan to tackle the sources of insecurity in the DRC and the region. Amongst others, it was agreed that the military chiefs of staff of the five countries involved in the dialogue would come together and examine ways to support the DRC's plans to address the FDLR. I believe that a regional plan born out of dialogue holds good prospects, and I'm strongly encouraging President Dos Santos's political leadership to ensure coherence and be a rallying point for coordination of efforts in the region. My several meetings with President Dos Santos have been very encouraging, and I firmly believe that much progress can be achieved by Angola's lead of the ICGLR in the next 2 years. As I was saying earlier, the FARDC, supported by MONUSCO and its Force Intervention Brigade, are making significant progress in their operations against the ADF. Operations have now started against the FDLR, as you've heard. These are indeed important developments. They should, however, I believe, take into account the regional plan and the steps agreed in Luanda and align efforts for optimum results. It's my sincere hope that robust operations against FDLR elements that refuse to surrender would be vigorously sustained and concluded speedily. Those who surrender and that have not been involved in the genocide or other serious crimes should have the option to return to Rwanda in dignity through the established processes. President Kabila's commitments in Luanda to address the FDLR threat in a comprehensive manner by the end of the year and his government's ultimatum on the 24th of February to the FDLR, as well as the recent actions by the FARDC supported by MINUSCO and the Force Intervention Brigade, are very encouraging signs. Tackling the FDLR presence in eastern DRC should indeed go a long way to address Rwanda's concerns and ease tensions in the region. It would form the building block for trust and mutual confidence with multiplier effects to facilitate regional, economic and social cooperation. It would also facilitate efforts for the full restoration of state authority in the Kivu regions of eastern DRC. It's equally important as we move into the second year of implementation that we fast track the social and economic aspects of the peace, security and cooperation framework. As I've always said, peace cannot take root without tangible evidence on the ground that jobs and businesses are able to flourish, with people feeling a difference in their lives. Following the endorsement by the Regional Oversight Mechanism of the convening of a private sector investment conference for the region, I've been working together with my team with the ICGLR, the AU, the EU, the World Bank, UN agencies, and with a number of UN member states to actualise this conference before the end of this year. The conference will promote a shared understanding of the role of the private sector in advancing the economic pillar of the framework, inspire actionable policy recommendations for the consideration of decision makers, and create a venue for public and private stakeholders of the signatory countries to identify business and investment opportunities. It will also create a space for business leaders to forge relationships, expand their professional networks, and share experiences. My office will convene the conference jointly with the ICGLR, SADC, and the African Union in close consultation with other UN agencies, countries of the region, and with the support of the bilateral and multilateral institutions. The social and economic pillars of the PSC framework also recorded some achievements with the establishment of the Women's Platform for the PSC framework, which I had the privilege to help launch on the 28th of January in Addis Ababa during the AU summit. The ICGLR opened the regional training facility on sexual and gender-based violence in Kampala, Uganda, on the 16th of February for the training of security personnel in the region. Collaboration is ongoing with the ICGLR and other partners to operationalise these important mechanisms. My recent interactions with civil society organisations from across the region, which took place at Addis Ababa on the margins of the African Union January summit, and follow-up meetings both in the DRC and lately in The Hague during the International Contact Group meeting, have clearly revealed the readiness of this critical group to play an active role in the implementation of the framework. I look to council members to lend their support to all these initiatives, which would directly impact the lives of the people of the region. Relative progress has been achieved as well at national level since the endorsement of the Plan of Action for the implementation of the PSC framework. I commend President Kabila and the government of the DRC for promulgating the amnesty law in line with the Kampala dialogue declarations, which formally ended the conflict with the M23. I think we must all recognise that this was not an easy step for a government to take, and that it was a sign of leadership that the government was determined that this had to be part of the process. This amnesty, as we know, will not be extended to those responsible for serious crimes and human rights violations. However, more actions are required to follow up, particularly on the repatriation from Uganda and Rwanda of former M23 combatants and the beginning of an effective DDR process for eligible members. During my recent visit in the region, I raised the issue of the former M23 combatants with the relevant authorities, and I am glad that some progress is being made in relation to the DDR, and there are active discussions with international partners. But this is a critical issue on which more progress needs to be made, as my colleague and friend Martin Kobler has emphasised. I continue to be engaged with Uganda Minister of Defence, Minister Kionga, and the ICGLR, a national oversight mechanism in the DRC, to fast-track the establishment of the follow-up mechanism as agreed under the Kampala Dialogue Declarations. Meanwhile, several critical issues remain that require urgent attention. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, more needs to be done to consolidate state authority throughout the country, to reform the security sector, and again I agree with Martin Kobler, this has to be more of a priority, particularly the army, and promote good governance, reconciliation, tolerance, and democratisation. While efforts are ongoing to align various national plans with the PSC framework for optimal results, the DRC National Oversight Mechanism needs to be further strengthened to efficiently carry out its mandate. During my recent visit to the DRC, I was pleased to learn from both Prime Minister Matata and the head of the National Oversight Mechanism, Francois Mwamba, that support to the mechanism and coordination with the government is improving. Madam President, distinguished members of the Council, despite the modest progress recorded in the past year, we still have a long way to go to achieve the objectives of the PSC framework. The security and humanitarian situation in Eastern DRC remains fragile. I would say remains unacceptable, because there is still not the security that particularly women and their families need. We must therefore find the means and courage to address all underlying causes of conflicts, promote reconciliation, and tackle the obstacles that impede the voluntary return of refugees in safety and in dignity. Furthermore, efforts should be geared towards working with the region to build trust, without which economic and social cooperation cannot thrive. While efforts should remain focused on stabilising Eastern DRC, we must equally be mindful of the impact of developments in the Central African Republic and South Sudan, also signatories to the framework, and indeed neighbours to the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm very concerned, as I know members of the Council are, about continuing reports of gross violations of human rights in these countries, as well as the prevailing security situation. Recently, at a breakfast in Kinshasa, I met President Catherine Samba Panza, the interim president of the Central African Region Republic, on the 3rd of March. We spoke at length, and she informed me of the urgent need for additional capacity to be provided by the United Nations to support peacekeeping in her country, and requested that I bring this dire need to the attention of distinguished members of the Council today. In addition, and in a way that I think we need to pay attention to, the growing tensions in another signatory country, Burundi, are also quite worrisome. I'll travel to Bujumbura on the 19th of March to engage with the government and stakeholders in close coordination with SRSG Parfait Onanga Ayanga. Before travelling to Burundi, I will be in Goma on the 18th of March, 1 year to the day from when my mandate started, for an announcement and press conference about the Peace One Day of the 21st of September, which will be celebrated in the Democratic Republic of Congo this year. It will be an opportunity for the world, in a sense, to take stock of both the progress and the needs in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In the coming months, certain courses of action would be critical if further meaningful progress is to be achieved in the implementation of the PSC framework. At the national level, the DRC government needs to quickly implement the provisions of the Kampala Dialogue Declarations, including the administrative and technical steps to facilitate the repatriation of the almost 2,000 former M23 combatants who fled to Rwanda and Uganda last year. Further delay in this process could be costly to peace and regional stability. The national DDR programme also needs to gain immediate traction. It remains stalled due to the lack of an agreed approach and an agreed funding plan with the international partners. concrete actions in fair and independent courts would also be required against those who have committed serious violations of human rights and international crimes, and I welcome the proposal for the establishment of mixed courts. Madam President, distinguished members of the Council, while it's important to hold Member States accountable for the implementation of their commitments and to provide support in this regard, we mustn't fail to be guided by the fact that achieving peace and stability in the region will be an incremental process. The region would therefore require time as well as dedicated support to achieve the objectives of the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework. More importantly, international engagements and messaging to Member States must be strong, constant, well-coordinated and coherent for the desired results. So despite the other pressures, and I know they are very real, on members of the Security Council, I would plead for a continued strong support, as you have shown, strong and continued support for the DRC and the region. In the coming months, and with the kind support of the Council, I intend to continue my engagements with President Dos Santos and Foreign Minister Chakoti to seek further collaboration on the political dialogue among leaders of the region on sensitive issues. It's my sincere hope that beginning with the ongoing dialogue on illegal armed groups, this process would develop to include dialogue on other critical issues that would otherwise severely limit the achievement of the goals of the PSC framework. I shall also continue my efforts with the DRC government and support the ICGLR Secretariat's efforts to ensure the effective implementation and follow-up of the Kampala Dialogue declarations. I will, of course, continue to work closely with SRSG Martin Kobler, with whom, as he has also said, I have an excellent relationship. We work very closely together, and I think that is a strength, and we both understand the necessity to complement each other, but also work very closely together. I will also work increasingly with civil society, including women's groups, and with international partners, including the team of envoys who have also an excellent relationship, to assist the DRC government in accelerating the implementation of key national reforms, including security sector reform, consolidation of state authority throughout the country, national reconciliation and democratisation, particularly as we approach the next election cycle. Excellencies, let me conclude by a personal word regarding a special memorial event which is imminent, the 20th anniversary of the genocide that occurred in Rwanda. As I said to you during my first briefing to the Security Council as Special Envoy in May last year, I recall vividly my first visit to Rwanda after this tragic event, and the images of the atrocities remain indelible in my mind. As we commemorate the genocide, I'd like to encourage all of us to reflect deeply on the lessons learned from the past work together to ensure that the succeeding years, the next 20 years and well beyond in the Great Lakes region of Africa will be characterised by tolerance, peace, stability and development. Thank you very much.
Je remercie Madame Robinson pour son exposé et je donne maintenant la parole aux membres du Conseil qui souhaitent faire une déclaration. Je donne la parole aux représentants du Rwanda.
Thank you, Madam President. And I thank SRSG Kobler and SESG Robinson for taking the time to brief us today on the reports of the Secretary General and head of MONUSCO's mandate renewal. Madam President, as the Secretary General report highlights, despite the positive developments of late last year, it is clear that the momentum has slowed, with limited progress on both the political and the military fronts. We are looking at a volatile situation, security situation in not only the East, but throughout the country. Negative forces are still at rampage, killing and maiming, raping young girls and women, recruiting children, and causing thousands of displacements of civilians. The seriousness and scale of killings and violations that continue in Katanga and in areas formerly occupied by M23 in North Kivu are deeply troubling. A major reason for this is the prevalent culture of impunity that continues throughout the country. All perpetrators, whether from the FRDC, which has committed 18% of crimes reported in 2013, or any other armed group, must be brought to justice and held accountable for their crimes. There's no doubt that the next few months will be critical, and we need to take a serious look at how Resolution 2098 is being implemented, especially in the neutralization of negative armed groups, in the consolidation of the peace process, and in the protection of civilians in liberated areas. We welcome the reports presented by briefers on some members of some armed groups that have peacefully surrendered, and indeed, we applaud FRDC, supported by MONUSCO, for attacking and destroying a number of ADF camps. The resumption of the Minova trial is another positive development, and we look forward to a conclusive prosecution that can set a precedent for future cases. The recently promulgated amnesty law, as per Nairobi agreement, is also a positive step in national reconciliation, but one that will require measurable actions. We urge MONUSCO and the international community to closely monitor its implementation. Madam President, however, these positive developments should not obscure the fact that one of the oldest armed groups remains at large. As always, for the past 20 years, the problem that we have is the posture of the DRC government and the UN peacekeepers, currently MONUSCO, towards the threat posed by FDLR genocidal forces responsible for the genocide against the Tutsi. Throughout the last quarter of 2013, we were told that FDLR are next on the list of negative forces to be eliminated. So what happened from when the promise is made to the next briefing? No one knows. No accountability. At our last meeting on MONUSCO, the military operation plan presented to the Security Council was that FRDC was to go after ADF. They did it, and we applaud them. Following that, we were told that MONUSCO was to put their resources against FDLR. Nothing happened. Only a week or two before this briefing, do we hear in the news that there was a military operation against FDLR. The threat of FDLR persists despite the mandate of MONUSCO, which was given extra offensive capabilities after the deployment of the intervention brigade and the lack of MONUSCO to commit to fighting this force remains evident. Once again, it is high time we see a change of attitude of DRC government towards the FDLR. Rwanda has for several years expressed legitimate concerns with the lack of political will of the government of DRC to tackle the threat of the FDLR. Various UNSC reports have detailed evidence of all kinds of support given to FDLR by DRC and Rwanda has even provided more. The continuous excuses given by MONUSCO again and again when it comes to conducting military operations against FDLR is kind of disturbing. When it is not excuses of lack of intelligence, and which Rwanda did share with MONUSCO, it is engaged in propaganda operations to hoodwink the UNSC about military operations with FRDC against FDLR. On 9th March 2014, MONUSCO FIB jointly with FRDC raided FDLR illegal roadblock along Karengera-Tongo Road. Reliable information reveals that Colonel Ramadan, acting FRDC commander of the 8th Military Region, leaked information of the impending FIB attack on FDLR, hence undermining this operation. Madam President, let me just add that it is not only Rwanda expressing frustration over inaction against negative forces. The countries of the region under ICGLR have expressed frustration of the lack of political will by MONUSCO to address the threats of armed groups in the Great Lakes region. East DRC has been host to domestic and foreign armed groups, particularly M23, FDLR, and ADF NALU. As a result, ICGLR came up with detailed mechanisms to address the situation, including political and military measures. Some of these mechanisms have been taken over by UN, including intervention brigade under MONUSCO, and yet the major threat posed by FDLR has not been tackled. This was again subject of ICGLR heads of state summit in Luanda, Angola on 15th January 2014, where the chiefs of defense staff of Angola, DRC, Rwanda, Uganda, and South Africa were again tasked to assess the situation and come up with new mechanisms of eradicating FDLR. On the FDLR current situation, let me briefly share with you some updates on the FDLR activities. The FDLR strength is estimated to 3,640 with infantry integral weapons. This strength is likely to increase due to ongoing recruitment and training. Currently, FDLR is engaged in the following activities. A, on enhancing collaboration with FRDC, especially at operational level. This has enabled FDLR to refit, rearm, share intelligence, have freedom of action, and free passage for infiltration and terror attacks in Rwanda. Since July 2013 to date, 42 FDLR infiltrators, terror elements, have been arrested and undergoing prosecution in Rwandan courts. B, on mobilization recruitment, training, and establishment of terror networks in Rwanda. These activities are facilitated by provision of safe passage and logistics by FRDC. C, the recent claim by MONUSCO that FDLR is located in populated areas is just a sheer lie. Instead, the outfit has most of its forward units in Virunga National Park in North Kivu Province. It also maintains its dispositions in unpopulated areas of Mwenga and Uvira territories in South Kivu. And on illegal mining and taxation in Eastern DRC to sustain the war effort. Madam President, I would also like to discuss on a different issue of M23 ex-combatant. While the SG report suggests that consultations on the unresolved issue of the ex-combatants in Rwanda are ongoing, we remind this council that these combatants have been in Rwanda since March 2013. It's almost a year. The government of Rwanda has done everything required by international law to contain this group, including relocating them to Ngoma district in Eastern Province, approximately 250 kilometers from the DRC border. But despite our repeated calls for international community to take over responsibility, not much has been done. And there were some contacts which were initiated in December, but it's really not that much. On the report of the PAC framework, I will not dwell much on that since the implementation of the PACA will be discussed on 27th of this month in Nairobi. To conclude, Madam President, as we have said previously, next month marks the 20th commemoration of the genocide against the Tutsi. And there could be no greater symbol of justice for its victims than the defeat and eradication of FDLR once for all. A virulent genocidal force that has been allowed to terrorize the region for the past two decades. I thank you, Madam President.
Je remercie le représentant du Rwanda pour sa déclaration et je donne maintenant la parole au représentant de la République démocratique du Congo.
Madame la Présidente, je voudrais au seuil de ces propos vous dire combien nous sommes honorés de vous voir présider les délibérations du Conseil de sécurité de ces jours. Vous représentez en effet le Luxembourg, un pays avec lequel la République démocratique du Congo entretient des relations séculaires empreintes d'estime et du respect réciproque. Je voudrais saisir cette opportunité pour saluer votre prédécesseur, la distinguée représentante de la Lituanie, et la féliciter pour le développement, le dévouement et la compétence avec laquelle il a dirigé le Conseil le mois écoulé. C'est également ici le lieu d'exprimer au Conseil la gratitude du peuple et du gouvernement de la République démocratique du Congo pour les efforts déployés par les Nations Unies afin de préserver la souveraineté et l'intégrité territoriale de notre pays et pour lui garantir la paix et la stabilité. Je souhaite enfin rendre hommage à M. Ban Ki-moon, secrétaire général des Nations Unies, dont le souci d'œuvrer à la consolidation de la paix dans mon pays traduit son implication personnelle dans la mobilisation des dirigeants de la région des Grands Lacs et de l'Afrique australe pour la signature de l'accord cadre pour la paix, la sécurité et la coopération en République démocratique du Congo et dans la région, accord conclu à Addis Abeba le 24 février 2013. Madame la Présidente, Mesdames et Messieurs les membres du Conseil, ma délégation a pris acte du rapport du secrétaire général sur la mise en œuvre de l'accord cadre pour la paix, la sécurité et la coopération en République démocratique du Congo et dans la région. Document S-2014-153 et du rapport du secrétaire général sur la mission de l'Organisation des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation en République démocratique du Congo, document S-2014-157, dont le Conseil est saisi. Ma délégation se félicite de constater que ces deux rapports reconnaissent de manière unanime les efforts déployés par mon pays dans la mise en œuvre de ses engagements au terme de l'accord cadre pour la paix, la sécurité et la coopération en République démocratique du Congo et dans la région. Pour la République démocratique du Congo, la mise en œuvre de l'accord cadre qui, pour la première fois, jette les bases d'une paix durable dans l'est du pays et d'une cohabitation pacifique entre ces derniers et ses voisins, singulièrement ceux de l'Est, mérite d'être souligné. Cet accord cadre et la résolution 2098 qui est venue le renforcer représentent des innovations majeures, tant dans l'appréhension de la crise qui sévit dans la région des Grands Lacs depuis la deuxième moitié des années 90, que dans la doctrine traditionnelle des Nations Unies en matière de maintien de la paix. Pour les populations longtemps meurtries des pays de la région, l'accord cadre et la résolution pré-rappelés sont perçus comme des preuves éloquentes de la détermination de la communauté internationale d'aider à trouver une solution définitive à une instabilité qui n'a que trop duré et pour laquelle mon pays a notamment payé un lourd tribut. Dans cette perspective, ma délégation voudrait faire sien l'appel lancé par les chefs d'État et de gouvernement des pays signataires de l'accord cadre à l'issue de la réunion de haut niveau du mécanisme régional de suivi qui s'est tenue à Addis Abeba le 31 janvier 2014 et par lesquels ils ont appelé les pays de la région à coopérer et à prendre les mesures nécessaires pour neutraliser les groupes armés, combattre l'impunité pour des crimes de guerre, crimes contre l'humanité, violences sexuelles liées au conflit et aux autres violations flagrantes des droits de l'homme et à mener des actions appropriées contre les personnes visées par le régime des sanctions des Nations Unies. Madame la Présidente, la République démocratique du Congo est déterminée à assumer sa part de responsabilité afin que la paix et la concorde reviennent dans la région. À cet effet, dès le lendemain de la signature de l'accord cadre, le gouvernement congolais s'est attelé à remplir ses obligations. Dans cette optique, le gouvernement poursuivra les efforts engagés pour parachever la réforme du secteur de sécurité, l'assainissement des structures et du personnel de l'armée, des services de sécurité et de la police, le recrutement dans les forces de défense des jeunes congolais issus de toutes les provinces du pays, la réouverture des académies militaires, la formation avec le concours des partenaires bilatéraux, des forces spéciales et des unités d'appui, avec comme objectif prioritaire l'opérationnalisation de la force de réaction rapide, sont autant d'actions concrètes déjà engagées et que le gouvernement compte renforcer afin de rendre la défense de notre territoire plus efficace et de mieux assurer l'autorité de l'État. Comme le souligne le secrétaire général dans ses deux rapports, le président de la République, son Excellence M. Joseph Kabila Kabange, a promulgué le 11 février 2014 la loi qui amnistie le fait d'insurrection, le fait de guerre et le délit politique commis sur le territoire de la République démocratique du Congo entre le 18 février 2006 et le 20 décembre 2013. Il y a un mois, après son grand oral devant la Chambre basse du Parlement, le président de la Commission électorale nationale indépendante a rencontré les partis et regroupements politiques. Ces rendez-vous qui consacraient le démarrage effectif du cycle électoral 2014-2016 s'est soldé par l'adoption à l'unanimité du nouveau code de conduite des partis politiques et des candidats. À la date du 10 février 2014, ce code avait recueilli 233 signatures des partis politiques. Dans le cadre du programme DDR, il convient de rappeler que le 26 décembre 2013, le Conseil des ministres avait adopté le troisième plan national de désarmement, de mobilisation et réintégration. L'identification des combattants des groupes armés du Nord Kivu, regroupés dans les sites de Bweremana et de Kanyaru chinois, est achevée. Ceux d'entre eux qui sont éligibles au DDR 3 seront incessamment évacués vers les centres de triage pour les opérations de DDR. Pendant ces temps, l'évacuation vers les centres de triage de Kitona des combattants ex-Bakatakatanga remplissant les conditions se poursuit. Par ailleurs, et comme l'a annoncé le président de la République dans son discours à la Nation le 31 décembre 2013, le processus de décentralisation entrera bientôt dans sa phase exécutoire avec la mise en place du nouveau gouvernement, avec en toile de fond la mise en place progressive de nouvelles provinces, la dévolution des services financiers de l'administration centrale à celle de province et la mise sur pied de la Caisse nationale de péréquation. Madame la Présidente, on se souviendra qu'après la défaite du M23, le président de la République, commandant suprême des forces armées de la République démocratique du Congo, a ordonné le désarmement forcé de tous les groupes armés nationaux et étrangers encore actifs sur toute l'étendue du territoire national qui refusaient de répondre à l'offre de désarmement volontaire. Sur le terrain des opérations, la traque des rebelles réfractaires au programme DDR a effectivement commencé avec le lancement de la campagne de pacification de l'Est du pays par les FARDC à partir du 16 janvier 2014. Les opérations se déroulent de manière satisfaisante aussi bien dans le Nord Kivu contre les ADF que dans la partie sud de cette province et au site que vous contre les rebelles rwandais des FDLR. C'est dans cet ordre d'idées que M. Martin Kobler a récemment salué les opérations des FARDC contre les FDLR et les groupes armés et a annoncé le soutien et l'engagement direct de la MONUSCO auprès de l'armée congolaise pour neutraliser les FDLR. Comme l'a fait le porte-parole du gouvernement lors de son point de presse du 7 mars 2014, M. Kobler a également demandé dans un communiqué aux rebelles FDLR de se désolidariser immédiatement de leur leader poursuivi par la justice sous peine d'être désarmé de force. Dans la même veine, pour reprendre l'idée exprimée le 26 février dernier devant le Sénat américain par l'envoyé spécial des États-Unis d'Amérique dans la région des Grands Lacs, le pays hébergeant les éléments de fait du M23, faute de les rendre à la République démocratique du Congo et à la justice internationale, ont la grande responsabilité, conformément aux dispositions de l'accord cadre, de s'assurer que ces derniers ne reprennent pas leurs activités belliqueuses. Concernant le soutien du gouvernement de la RDC au FDLR, comme venait de le dire ici tout à l'heure l'ambassadeur du Rwanda, lors de la séance de la fois passée, la République démocratique du Congo vous a fait savoir les efforts qu'il a fournis dans la traque qu'ils ont menée jadis avec le gouvernement du Rwanda. Et par la suite, ces efforts ont été poursuivis par mon gouvernement, seul, et ensuite avec le concours de la MONUSCO. Et ces efforts ont été interrompus, nous l'avons toujours dit devant vous ici, ces efforts ont été interrompus suite à la rébellion du M23. Et comme je venais de le dire, maintenant qu'on en a fini avec la rébellion du M23, la République démocratique du Congo, qui a demandé au Conseil de mettre sur pied la brigade d'intervention. La brigade d'intervention a été mise sur pied sur demande de la République démocratique du Congo. Et c'est à cette brigade que le Conseil a confié les mandats de pouvoir éradiquer toutes les forces négatives qui existent dans la région, ainsi que les différents groupes armés. Et ce travail, je viens de le dire, M. Martin Kobler est là, il essaie à commencer. Donc, le gouvernement de la République démocratique du Congo, et nous l'avons toujours dit, n'a pas intérêt à pouvoir soutenir les FDLR. Car depuis le génocide rwandais, et que les FDLR sont arrivés sur son territoire, et vous le savez très bien que les FDLR ne sont pas arrivés sur le territoire de la République démocratique du Congo sur la demande de la République démocratique du Congo, c'est parce que la République démocratique du Congo voulait se montrer hospitalière en accueillant la population rwandaise qui fouillait les génocides. C'est comme ça que ces génocidaires sont arrivés sur son territoire. Et aujourd'hui, ce problème devient un problème de la République démocratique du Congo qui doit tout le temps reprendre de cela. Alors qu'en fait, si les FDLR se retrouvent sur le territoire de la République démocratique du Congo, ce problème-là, c'est un problème. C'est vrai, c'est la République démocratique du Congo qui en souffre parce que ces gens, depuis qu'ils sont chez nous, les gens qui les tuent, ce sont des Congolais. Ce sont des femmes congolaises qui sont violées. Ce sont des villages congolais qui sont incendiés. C'est nous qui souffrons donc des FDLR. Vous croyez, à moins qu'on soit cynique, qu'un gouvernement dont la population souffre de ces actes-là peut soutenir ce genre d'individus criminels? Non. Je l'avais dit la fois passée, l'ambassadeur du Rwanda, il vient là Et vous tous, vous le savez, on continue à parler du génocide qu'on va fêter bientôt. Il ne doit pas se montrer cynique à l'endroit de la population congolaise qui souffre. Nous avons perdu dans l'est de mon pays plus de 6 millions de personnes qui sont mortes. Et si, comme je l'ai dit la fois passée ici, si la République démocratique du Congo est étrangère au génocide rwandais, mais le Rwanda pourra-t-il dire autant pour les 6 millions de Congolais qui sont morts dans l'est? Non, il ne faut pas qu'on se moque des Congolais. Parce que je vous dis que le gouvernement congolais ne peut pas soutenir les FDLR. Nous n'avons aucun intérêt à le soutenir. Monsieur Kobler, qui travaille dans la région, il pourra bien témoigner. Hier, vous-même, vous le savez, quand les experts avaient déposé les rapports ici, quelles étaient les accusations du Rwanda qui dénonçait les rapports des experts? Ils dénonçaient aussi la MONUSCO. Ils disaient que la MONUSCO aussi coopérait avec les FDLR. Non. Je constate que c'est de la mauvaise foi parce que le Rwanda tient à cet élément-là qui lui permet de déstabiliser tout le temps la République démocratique du Congo. Parce qu'il en fait son prétexte. Et il sait qu'aujourd'hui, si vous éliminez ces prétextes-là, il ne saura plus aller sur le territoire de la République démocratique du Congo et de faire ce qu'ils sont en train de faire là. Donc j'en appelle à la communauté internationale. J'en appelle à vous tous membres du Conseil pour nous aider à régler cette situation-là pour laquelle mon pays est vraiment innocent. Et nous ne pouvons pas supporter qu'on nous accuse ici gratuitement. Madame la Présidente, pour conclure, le renouvellement du mandat de la mission de l'Organisation des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation de la paix en République démocratique du Congo devra se faire selon l'esprit des paragraphes 9, 10, 11 et 12 de la résolution 2098 du 28 mars 2013 par laquelle votre Conseil avait notamment décidé de poursuivre et parachever, grâce à sa brigade d'intervention, la mission qui lui a été confiée de neutraliser les groupes armés, conformément à l'alinéa B du paragraphe 12 de la résolution 2098. Ce qui permettra de réduire la menace que représentent les groupes armés pour l'autorité de l'État et la sécurité des civils dans l'est de la République démocratique du Congo, et de préparer le terrain pour les activités de stabilisation. À cet effet, je voudrais féliciter la MONUSCO, sa brigade d'intervention et les pays qui la composent pour la qualité du travail abattu tout au long de ses premiers mandats finissants. Le travail de cette brigade, à côté des forces armées de la République démocratique du Congo, a conduit à la défaite du M23. Ce que le peuple congolais a fortement apprécié. Pour mon gouvernement, le second mandat de la brigade d'intervention qui va bientôt commencer devrait consacrer le couronnement des efforts déjà entrepris pour ramener la paix en République démocratique du Congo et dans toute la région des Grands Lacs. Comme le disait le président de la République, Son Excellence Monsieur Joseph Kabila Kabange, à l'occasion de la cérémonie des signatures de l'accord cadre, je cite, « Il est temps, plus que temps, que nous garantissions à nos populations le droit à la vie et à la jouissance soutenue du bien le plus précieux qu'ils attendent de leurs dirigeants, à savoir la paix. Non pas la paix des baïonnettes, mais moins encore celle des cimetières par essence factice et éphémère, mais plutôt la paix qui découle de la reconnaissance d'un destin partagé, de la volonté de vivre ensemble, de la prise en charge responsable de problèmes et du respect des règles et des principes, dont particulièrement ceux auxquels nous venons à nouveau de souscrire en signant l'accord cadre. Cette paix-là est certes exigeante, mais elle est la seule qui soit même de résister à l'usure du temps et aux aléas de l'histoire, et n'est pas possible sans la sincérité des acteurs, et elle ne peut se construire que dans la vérité. La vérité, c'est que, quoique maintes fois agressée, la République démocratique du Congo, pays épris de paix, a toujours respecté l'intégrité territoriale et la souveraineté de tous ses voisins. Il en sera toujours ainsi. Fin de citation. Madame la Présidente, Mesdames et Messieurs les membres du Conseil, pour terminer, permettez-moi de profiter de cette opportunité pour saluer la présence parmi nous du représentant spécial du secrétaire général en République démocratique du Congo, M. Martin Kobler, et le remercier pour le dynamisme qu'il a su imprimer aux actions de la MONUSCO sur le terrain des opérations. Je voudrais enfin exprimer notre gratitude à Son Excellence Madame Mary Robinson, envoyée spéciale du secrétaire général pour la région des Grands Lacs, pour son engagement et ses efforts en vue du rétablissement d'une paix durable en République démocratique du Congo et dans l'ensemble de la région des Grands Lacs. Mesdames et Messieurs les membres du Conseil, je vous remercie.
Je remercie le représentant de la République démocratique du Congo pour sa déclaration. Le représentant du Rwanda a demandé la parole pour faire une autre déclaration. Je la lui donne.
Madame la Présidente, je ne vais pas abuser de votre temps. C'est juste une petite rectification que je veux faire ici. Vous comprendrez très bien pourquoi. Je suis Rwandais, je ne saurais pas sortir comme ça en ce sens-là. Monsieur l'ambassadeur, chers collègues du Congo, nous n'allons pas fêter le génocide du Rwanda. Je sais que la langue de Molière et de Voltaire n'est pas la nôtre, mais ce que nous allons faire le 7 avril, nous allons commémorer le génocide perpétré contre les Tutsis au Rwanda. Je souhaiterais rectifier cela. Nous n'allons pas fêter. Merci. C'est tout.
Je remercie le représentant du Rwanda pour sa déclaration. Il n'y a plus d'orateurs inscrits sur la liste. Le représentant de la RDC a demandé la parole pour faire une autre déclaration.
Je vous remercie, Madame la Présidente. J'apprécie la rectification que vient de faire l'ambassadeur du Rwanda. C'est une commémoration à laquelle nous allons tous participer. Parce que l'événement connu par son pays, c'est un événement triste et que nous ne pouvons pas accepter. Je voudrais aussi profiter de l'occasion pour dire qu'il n'y a pas de culture d'impunité en RDC. Je crois que dans ce que nous disons à cette tribune, nous devons avoir un minimum de respect à l'endroit des autorités de nos pays. Et je l'avais déjà dit la fois passée, l'ambassadeur du Rwanda doit apprendre à respecter les autres pays, à nous respecter, à respecter les autorités de mon pays. Donc, ce genre de langage, nous n'allons plus l'accepter. Comme je l'avais dit, le fait qu'il soit membre du Conseil, il ne doit pas s'autoriser certaines choses. Il n'a aucun droit pour ça. Je crois que pour répondre à tout ce qu'il a dit là, qui offense mon pays, je l'invite prochainement à avoir du respect pour mon pays et pour les autorités de mon pays. Je vous remercie, Madame la Présidente.
Je remercie le représentant de la République démocratique du Congo pour sa déclaration. Il n'y a plus d'orateurs inscrits sur la liste. J'invite à présent les membres du Conseil à poursuivre l'examen de la question dans le cadre de consultation. La séance est levée.